MyAudiobooks.ai presents Project Stargate, remote viewing, Cold War intelligence, and actionable evidence. For roughly 23 years, ending in 1995, American intelligence and defense agencies funded attempts to describe hidden targets through remote viewing. Military personnel and civilian contractors sat in quiet rooms, even nothing more than geographical coordinates or sealed numbers, attempting to sketch foreign submarine pens, missing aircraft, and overseas hostage sites. When the federal government finally commissioned an outside scientific evaluation to review the laboratory record, two distinguished researchers reached starkly opposing conclusions about what the data proved. What did the intelligence community actually get for its investment? Why did defense officials pursue the idea for more than two decades? And what finally brought the project to an end? At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library. Remote viewing began as an operational term for an extraordinary proposition: the attempt by an individual to perceive a distant location, object, or event shielded from ordinary human senses. In a standard trial, a participant received only an arbitrary set of geographic coordinates or a randomized target identification number. Without maps, reference materials, or sensory contact, the viewer attempted to sketch the site and record their impressions. The concept took root inside national security agencies during the height of the Cold War. In the early 1970s, foreign intelligence assessments and internal Pentagon memoranda circulated reports detailing Soviet and Eastern Bloc investments in parapsychology, telepathy, and what Soviet researchers termed psychotronics. This field investigated hypothetical interactions between human consciousness, physical matter, and energy fields. American intelligence analysts faced an uncomfortable dilemma. The mere existence of Soviet research reports did not prove that foreign adversaries had unlocked an unconventional spying technique. Yet senior defense planners feared the strategic consequences of ignoring a potential breakthrough. If Soviet intelligence discovered a method to pinpoint covert installations or intercept classified communications without physical access, conventional surveillance and perimeter defenses would offer little protection. A defensive hedge drove the program forward. Conventional intelligence collection, relying on high-altitude reconnaissance flights, early satellite imagery, and human networks on the ground, carried immense operational costs and frequent blind spots. In contrast, remote viewing required minimal physical infrastructure, a quiet room, paper and pencils, and a modest annual budget. Proponents argued that a capability with such a massive potential payoff justified an exploratory financial risk. If the technique proved useless, the financial loss remained negligible. If it provided even a partial glimpse behind the Iron Curtain, the strategic return would be immense. The initiative that eventually carried the name Project Stargate never operated as a single, static entity. Instead, it moved through an evolving succession of administrative homes, research contracts, and classified codenames across more than two decades. The work began in 1972, when the Central Intelligence Agency sponsored exploratory remote viewing experiments at the Stanford Research Institute in Menlo Park, California, under an effort known as Scan-8. Civilian researchers worked with early test subjects to establish formal laboratory protocols and determine whether anomalous perception held genuine intelligence potential. By the late 1970s, operational responsibility migrated into military intelligence. The United States Army launched operational remote viewing units under program names such as Gondola Wish and Grill Flame, stationing military personnel at Fort Meade, Maryland. As administrative oversight shifted and contract renewals took place, new project names emerged, including Centerlane and Dragoon Absorb. During the mid-1980s, management of the military detachment transferred to the Defense Intelligence Agency under the codename Sunstreak. It was only in 1991 that the Defense Intelligence Agency consolidated both the external research contracts and the operational military unit under the single umbrella designation, Stargate. By 1995, congressional directives prompted the transfer of the consolidated Stargate program back to the Central Intelligence Agency for a decisive, independent evaluation. Across its long lifespan, the project lived two distinct lives, requiring two separate evidentiary tests. The first was whether laboratory experiments could detect a measurable, anomalous human capability under controlled conditions. The second was whether operational military handlers could turn subjective session transcripts into dependable, actionable intelligence.
Inside an experimental laboratory session, the procedure followed a deliberate ritual. A viewer sat opposite an interviewer in an isolated, sound-dampened room. The interviewer presented an envelope containing an 8-digit geographic coordinate or an arbitrary identification number, possessing no prior knowledge of the target site. The viewer closed their eyes, vocalized immediate impressions, and drew sketches of physical shapes, architectural outlines, or topographical features. The fundamental challenge lay in evaluating whether the viewer's impressions matched reality. In an operational assignment, handlers sought real-world information about targets whose current state was unknown, leaving them with no immediate baseline to verify what the viewer described. In a scientific laboratory trial, researchers strictly controlled both the target pool and the information provided to the viewer. To evaluate a laboratory session, researchers relied on blinded judging. An independent judge, unaware of which target had been selected for the trial, received the viewer's sketches along with a small pool of candidate target packages, typically 4 or 5 distinct locations. The judge reviewed all candidates and ranked them from best match to worst match, based strictly on the viewer's descriptions. Statistical analysts measured whether the correct target received a top ranking more often than expected by chance. If a judge chose from 4 candidate targets, random guessing would place the correct target in the first position 25% of the time. Scoring significantly above that baseline across hundreds of trials suggested an anomaly. In certain laboratory series, viewers were reported to achieve correct target matches approximately 15% above standard chance baselines. Yet statistical significance did not equate to clear, photograph-like descriptions. Spoken impressions often consisted of broad, generic features: bodies of water, sloping landforms, cylindrical metal objects, or rectangular concrete structures. In isolation, a sketch of a long building beside water could seem like an exact hit for a target port facility, while simultaneously matching an industrial warehouse, an airport terminal, or a canal lock. Early experiments at the Stanford Research Institute drew heavy methodological criticism. Independent scientists pointed out risks of sensory leakage, such as audio cues between rooms, subtle hints in the interviewer's phrasing, or unrandomized target selection that allowed viewers to deduce upcoming sites. During the late 1980s and early 1990s, external research transferred to the defense contractor Science Applications International Corporation. These later trials introduced tighter procedural barriers, automated digital target selection, rigorous acoustic isolation, independent blinded judging pools, and pre-recorded target libraries designed to eliminate inadvertent queuing. Even with these improved controls, several experimental series continued to yield statistical departures from chance. The scientific controversy shifted from whether the numbers were unusual to what those numbers actually signified. While laboratories measured probabilities, military commanders needed actionable facts. Over 2 decades, operational units tackled real-world crises, locating hostages held in Lebanon, tracking missing military aircraft downed in remote terrain, and attempting to sketch interior components of newly detected foreign naval vessels. Advocates inside the program cited striking instances of apparent success. In certain high-profile sessions, viewers produced drawings of crane structures or specialized machinery that appeared to mirror reconnaissance photos obtained months later. These memorable coincidences generated strong internal support and persuaded sympathetic defense officials that the technique had practical merit. The broader operational record told a far more problematic story. The overwhelming majority of session transcripts produced vague impressions, incorrect geographical locations, and contradictory details. Handlers frequently faced sheets of sketches that matched nothing in particular until conventional reconnaissance confirmed the target's true layout. This dynamic created the persistent trap of retrospective matching. Once analysts knew the ground truth, human pattern recognition found connections between the viewer's drawings and the confirmed facility. But an operational intelligence officer could not afford to interpret data backward. Actionable intelligence requires precise, accurate, and timely data capable of guiding a mission before other assets verify the facts. When the Central Intelligence Agency conducted its comprehensive review, the agency concluded that across two decades of operational taskings, remote viewing reports had never provided the sole actionable lead to initiate, guide, or redirect a military operation. In the spring and summer of 1995, seeking a definitive resolution, the CIA's Office of Research and Development commissioned the American Institutes for Research to conduct a rigorous, independent assessment of both the laboratory research and the operational record. The scientific review was led by two prominent researchers, statistician Jessica Utz from the University of California, Davis, and psychologist Ray Hyman from the University of Oregon. Both examined the recent controlled experiments performed at Science Applications International Corporation, yet they reached deeply divergent conclusions. Utz concluded that the laboratory data demonstrated clear statistical evidence of anomalous cognition. She noted that the effect sizes across well-controlled trials exceeded chance expectations by a margin that ordinary experimental error could not readily explain. In her view, the data established an unexplained effect worthy of sustained scientific research into its underlying mechanisms. Hyman conceded that the recent experiments exhibited vastly superior methodological rigor and acknowledged that the reported scores departed from chance. However, he argued that statistical anomalies alone did not constitute evidence of paranormal functioning. Hyman pointed to persistent methodological uncertainties, the difficulty of guaranteeing absolute control against subtle experimental artifacts, and above all, the absence of independent replication across external laboratories. The overall report from the American Institutes for Research, submitted in September 1995, separated the laboratory dispute from the practical intelligence question. The evaluation noted that even if one accepted the existence of an anomalous laboratory effect, the data did not identify its physical source, predict its occurrence, or make it reliable. On the operational front, the findings were unequivocal. Intelligence consumers across military and civilian agencies reported that remote viewing output was consistently too ambiguous, unreliable, and erratic to support operational decisions. The American Institutes for Research recommended that the government terminate all intelligence community funding for remote viewing. The Central Intelligence Agency accepted the recommendation, bringing Project Stargate to a formal, permanent end. The declassification of tens of thousands of pages of Stargate records over subsequent decades opened an unprecedented window into a Cold War intelligence experiment. These records confirm that the United States government committed substantial personnel, administrative machinery, and funding to explore psychic phenomena. They preserve session transcripts, contracting documents, operational tasking logs, and internal policy evaluations. Yet the existence of official contracts, security clearances, and classification stamps does not validate the underlying paranormal claims. Institutional interest documents what administrators chose to investigate, not what human biology can achieve.
To understand the program's 23-year lifespan, analysts look to three distinct evidentiary tiers that ran through the files: a statistically anomalous laboratory score, an apparent descriptive match on paper, and an actionable piece of intelligence. Stargate endured because its advocates frequently conflated the first two tiers with the third. The initial strategic justification rested on Cold War fears of Soviet advances. Once established, the program survived on modest annual budgets that barely registered within multi-billion dollar defense authorizations. A small group of committed internal champions, buoyed by occasional striking matches and laboratory statistical margins, repeatedly lobbied sympathetic members of Congress and intelligence directors for contract renewals.
Organizational inertia and sunk cost thinking undoubtedly played a role in keeping the effort alive. When an intelligence capability requires little overhead, canceling it can feel like abandoning an asymmetric advantage, even when evidence of practical utility remains elusive. Open questions remain. The public record, vast as it is, does not encompass every informal briefing or off-the-record operational assessment that circulated among senior decision-makers. Future archival releases may offer clearer insight into how high-level policymakers weighed conflicting evidence. Yet, missing records do not constitute positive evidence of an overlooked capability. Any retrospective re-examination of the files faces the same stubborn obstacle that ended the program in 1995. To serve as actionable intelligence, an analytical source must provide specific, reliable details before the target is known, rather than relying on imaginative interpretation after the facts are established. Project Stargate stands as a rare, documented case study in how modern intelligence institutions confront extreme uncertainty. While the scientific community still debates the statistical margins of the laboratory record, the operational conclusion was decisive. An unconventional source that cannot be verified before the mission begins cannot be trusted when lives are on the line. As you reflect on this chapter of Cold War history, consider what threshold of evidence an unfamiliar source of information would need to meet before you would trust it to guide a crucial decision. Thanks for watching. To create your own audiobooks from your prompts and documents, visit myaudiobooks.ai. Subscribe for more.